Today I want to do something that I think is very interesting. I want to learn with you just a few psukim, and then look at other examples in Tanakh to see what this all means. We were in Perek Hei, Melachim Aleph Perek Hei, and we are up to Pasuk Tet. Okay, in the last week we talked about the description that the Tanakh gives us of Shlomo's kingdom in terms of the government structure that he set up, and in terms of the also the horses and the elaborate court, royal court with all the food and everything like that in Yerushalayim. The Navi then devotes a few psukim to speaking about Shlomo himself, but his wisdom. Now, Shlomo's wisdom we already discussed. We learned about the vision, the prophecy that he received in Givon, and Hashem said, "Ask whatever you want to ask." And he asked for wisdom, and Hashem said, "Well, you know, you could have asked for gold and silver and power, and instead you asked for wisdom. So for that, I'm going to make you the wisest person ever. And on top of that, you'll get the gold and the silver and the power as well." And we also saw the Mishpat Shlomo, the example that the Navi gave us of how he used his wisdom to solve the dilemma of the mother, the two mothers with the baby. And we talked about different ways to understand that story, but certainly the message there was that he used his wisdom to rule as a... you can close the window if you'd like. That he used his wisdom to rule with justice and to, you know, to bring about a rule of justice in the land, v'chule. Now, there's another short passage that describes his wisdom. And the fact that it's here, as opposed to simply tacked onto that discussion, I think is meant to place it not only in the context of Shlomo the person, but Shlomo the king that sits at the top of this glorious kingdom that was just described, the kingdom that has 40,000 stables of horses, and the royal palace that serves as these incredible amounts of meals every day for, you know, and the empire that stretches from one end of the world to the other. Who is the man who sits at the top of this? Vayitain, so Pasukei, Perikei Pasuktet. Maybe we'll read all five Pasukim and then we'll discuss them one by one. Vayitain Elohim Chochma Lishlomo Utvuna Harbe Meod V'rochav Lev Kachol Asher Sfat Hayam. He was given wisdom, exceeding amounts of wisdom and understanding. Rochav Lev is an interesting expression. Breadth of heart. I don't even know how to translate. Is there you have an English translation there? Or no?
I'm not sure where you are. You're at 5?
5'9". You in Melachim Aleph?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wait a minute. No, I'm not in
Melachim.
Sorry.
Yeah, I do that all the time. I do all the time. I open the wrong book and I can't figure out why it doesn't say what it's supposed to say. Rochav Lev, I guess, means... what's interesting here is that it's often a term that's used for like a generosity or something like that. But here it seems to be a certain type of breadth of understanding, not just a depth, but a breadth, like a broad vision. Someone is able to see like the full picture of everything. And then it says, "Vateirev chochmat Shlomo me chochmat kol bnei kedem umikol chochmat Mitzrayim." Interesting. His wisdom was greater than all the wisdom of the peoples of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt. Okay?
You want the translation?
Oh, yeah. How does it translate, Rochav Lev?
And God gave Shlomo very much wisdom and understanding and largeness of heart, like the sand that is on the seashore.
Largeness of heart. Okay, I'm not sure that helps us very much. Okay, said there. See, he's wiser than the wisdom of the East and wiser than Egypt. Come back to that pasuk. We'll come back to all these pasukim. Vayechkam mikol ha'adam. He was wiser than all people, which is exactly what Hashem promised him would happen. Even wiser than me'etan ha'ezrachi, veheiman, V'chalkol v'dardar v'darda b'nei mechol. Even wiser than Eitan ha'ezrachi and Heman and Chalkol and Dardar, the children of Machol. I don't know who these people are. We're going to try to see if we can figure out who these people are in a few minutes. But Shlomo was wiser than all four of them. Vayhi shmo b'chol agoyim saviv, and his fame spread to all the nations. Vayedaber shloshet alafim mashal. He spoke 3,000 mishalim. I'm not sure how to translate that. Your English says proverbs?
Yeah.
Okay, that's one way. Maybe it means that. Maybe it means allegories. Maybe it means... The word mashal is used to mean different things in different places in the Tanakh. But he spoke 3,000 of those. Vayhi shiro chamisha va'elef. Whether that's 1,005 or 1,500 or 6,000. A lot of songs. Vaydaber al ha'itzim. He spoke about trees. Min ha'erez asher balvanon v'ad ha'izov asher tzei bakir. Okay? Right? He spoke about... Yeah? Correct. From the largest trees, the cedars in Lebanon, to the little grass that grows in the cracks of the wall. Vaydaber al ha'beima v'al ha'of v'al ha'remes v'al ha'dagim. He spoke about animals and birds and reptiles and fish. And people came from all over the world to hear of his great wisdom and to hear from him. Now, we'll see, there's a parallel passage, I believe in Perchet or Tet, that also discusses the capital of Yerushalayim and all the wonders that were there. And Shlomo's role in there, including his encounter with Malkat Shva. So we'll have to discuss when we get there what the difference is between that parak and this parak, and you know, why it's split up into two. But clearly what's being shown here is that there's this, Shlomo's wisdom is part of the scene of what goes on in the kingdom in Yerushalayim, right? What's the picture we've been given in these parakim? We have a empire that stretches from one end of the world to the other, from the approaches to Egypt all the way up until Mesopotamia, to the approaches to the Euphrates River, again, approaching the borders that had been promised to Abraham. We have an empire in those borders that controls all that territory. It is an exceedingly wealthy empire. It is an exceedingly powerful empire. And to that end, he has 40,000 stables of horses and 12,000... riders, and he has this elaborate palace complex in Yerushalayim with these incredible feasts going on a daily basis. And the king who sits on top of this is known to be the wisest man in the world. He speaks about trees and animals and plants, which perhaps means he was a biologist, zoologist, botanist. Notice he understood science. Maybe that's what it means. Maybe it means something else. We'll talk about it in a minute. He's an author of proverbs and songs. He writes poetry, perhaps. And he's known to be a wise person. And people come from all over the world, not only to be judged, as we saw already, that people came to him to be judged, but simply to hear, to meet this incredible person. That's the image that's being presented here. Let's see if we can go a little deeper and try to understand what exactly that means. So, let's start with, he was even wiser than the people in the East, and even wiser than the wise people of Egypt. I'm going to share with you a Dvar Torah that I heard just a few weeks ago, which, honestly, I don't know if it's true. But it was so interesting that I thought I would share it. In my shul, every week there's a Parsha Shir, different person each week. And a guy named Rav Amit Misgav spoke a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and maybe it was Parshat Vayetze when Yaakov Avinu had to leave and go to. It started like this. It said that Yaakov had to leave. Vayetze Yaakov mi'Be'er Sheva vayelech Charan. He went to Haran, but Haran is also referred to as Arza b'nei Kedem, the land of the people of the East. And he showed that the term B'nai Kedem appears throughout the book of Bereishit. And he developed this entire theory. He then noted that Yaakov Avinu had to go to Haran. Haran is in Mesopotamia. It's to the east, north and east. And then he came back to Eretz Israel, and at the end of his life he went west to Mitzrayim. Okay? He developed this theory with some support from the Tanakh in various places, that there's a certain wisdom in the east. The east has to do with the rising sun. And that the people of the east studied nature, but they believed in an ideology of nature and of everything being predetermined, and there's no room for man to do anything. And that was what he called the concept of east, that basically complete denial of human initiative, just accepting fate. That was what he called the wisdom of the east. And he talked about how Lot left Avraham and went to just settle in Sodom, where you just kind of live off the land and, you know, whatever. And then he said that Mitzrayim was all about people. It was all about man and human initiative. And the Paros turned themselves into gods, and they built these huge tombs and these huge pyramids, whatever. And then he said that what's fascinating is that even in modern times, the Eastern world and the Western world continues to have these two ideologies. In the East, not only the Eastern religions are all based on, you know, what's it called, karma, and what's the other term they use there? Nirvana, right? Basically, the idea is just like you have to just like accept the vastness of the universe and sort of become nothing into it, and, you know, and the rest, of course, the West, denying that. But he said, even if you look at these secular ideologies, the secular ideology of the West is democracy. It's all based on human choices. And the secular ideology of the East was communism. It was all based on man is nothing versus the great state. So, and he tried to present this that you know, there's some truth in each. And Yaakov had to kind of be balanced in. So first he had to go into Galut in the East and then come back and then go into Galut in the West. And then ultimately his children had to come back. Is it true? Is it false? I don't know. I thought it was really, really interesting. But all I'm pointing out is that it says here also that Shlomo was wiser than all the wise people in the East and all the wise people in Egypt, which is in the West. So, like I said, I don't know. But apparently, what is true, apparently, is that those were two, listen, in Mesopotamia and Egypt are the two focal points of ancient civilization. And it's not by accident that Avraham Avinu came from Mesopotamia and had to go also to Mitzrayim, and then his son Yaakov had to go back to Mesopotamia, back to Mitzrayim, and even if you don't accept this whole little drusha thing. It's not by accident that Eretz Yisrael is smack in the middle of those two things on the major roads between those two focal points. And the Shlomo's kingdom reaches towards, but doesn't, he didn't capture Egypt or Mesopotamia. He made treaties with both. He married the daughter of Paro, and he had apparently relations with people in the north and the east as well. But it says that his wisdom surpassed even those of those great civilizations. That, at least that much seems to definitely be the case here. And not only that, but he was even wiser than Eitan HaEzrachi, Heman, Chalkol, and Dardar B'nei Mechol. Apparently these were very wise people. And he was even wiser than they were. You know, I guess it would be the equivalent of saying, you know, that guy was even smarter than Einstein, or, you know, whatever. Something along those lines. The question is if we can figure out who these people are or what is meant by this. Now, what's intriguing is that the names... Okay, so first of all, what do we have here? We have Eitan HaEzrachi, V'heiman v'chalkol v'darda b'nei mechol. So which people are b'nei mechol?
The last three?
Or maybe all four? Unclear, right? Okay. Two of these names are somewhat known to us, though. The names Eitan HaEzrachi and Heiman are known to us. Anyone know from where? From Tehillim. There's a parak of Tehillim, parak Peitet, Peichet first. Look at parak Peichet of Tehillim. Just look at the first sentence. Peichet. the many Prakim of Tehillim have an introductory sentence that sort of introduce the parak and mention the name of a person, assumedly that person being the author, although not necessarily. Parak Peched, Shir Mizmor Livnei Korach, Lamlatzeach, Al Machalat La'anot, Maskil Leheiman Ha'ezrachi. Now, our pasuk mentioned Heiman, it didn't call him Ezrachi. Our pasuk mentioned Eitan Ha'ezrachi. And he is the next pasuk, in the next parak of Tehillim. Tehillim Peted is Maskil Leitan Ha'ezrachi. Again, Perek Pechet of Tehillim seems to have been authored by Heiman Ha'ezrachi, and Perek Peitet seems to have been authored by Eitan Ha'ezrachi. Shlomo was wiser than Eitan Ha'ezrachi, so that sounds like the same guy who wrote Peitet, same exact name, and he's also wiser than Heiman and Chalkol and Dardab B'nei Machol. Is that Heiman Ha'ezrachi, or is it a different person named Heiman?
Maybe it's Meitan Ha'ezrachi v'Heiman together.
Maybe. Meitan, maybe it's Eitan Ha'ezrachi v'Heiman, both of them Ha'ezrachi. The question is, what does Ezrachi mean? Okay. And are they brothers? If they're brothers, then either both of them are B'nai Machol, or maybe it's Eitan Ha'ezrachi and Heiman, and also Kalkol and Dardah, the sons of Mechol. But it seems at least that Eitan Ha'ezrachi seems to be the same person. I mean, I guess there could be two people named Eitan Ha'ezrachi, but on the other hand, we know who Eitan and Heiman, the authors of Tehillim, were. Heiman Ha'ezrachi, go back to Pechet for a minute. Who wrote that perek? Look at that first pasuk again. There are a few words there that no one knows what they mean. Al machalat la'anot maskil. Those words refer probably to musical instruments or something. There was a lot of terms at the beginnings of like laminatseach and various terms like that. Maskil. We don't know what those terms mean. But there are two people's names mentioned here. At the end of the pasuk it says Leheiman Ha'ezrachi, but at the beginning it says Shir Mizmor Livnei Korach. There are 12 Prakim of Tehillim that are authored by B'nai Korach. The first 11 of them, for example, you can just flip back. This is a lot of them are in order. Pei Zayin is Livnei Korach Mizmor Shir. Pei Hei is Lam Natzeach Livnei Korach Mizmor. Pei Dalet Lam Natzeach Alagitit Livnei Korach Mizmor. There's 12 prakim in Tehillim that mention B'nai Korach. 11 of them just say Livnei Korach. The last one is Pechet, says Livnei Korach and Leheiman Ha'ezrachi. So who wrote it? The B'nai Korach wrote it or Heiman Ha'ezrachi wrote it? Maybe he's one of the descendants of Korach. Not maybe. He is. This we know for a fact from Divrei Hayamim. Please take a look in Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Vav. As we've discussed in the past, the beginning of Sefer Divrei Hayamim Aleph, the first 11 chapters, give very lengthy, detailed lists of genealogies of all the tribes. And here we have the genealogy of Levi. Okay, it starts from Levi, the person himself, Levi ben Yaakov, Bnei Levi, Vav Aleph is Gershom, Kehatim, Merari. I mean, Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Vav. This is very confusing, but it's okay. We're going to put all this together. Right now, we're just gathering information. Okay, so Bnei Levi, Levi himself, Yaakov Avinu had 12 sons. One of them was Levi. And Levi, we know, had 3 sons, Gershom, Kehatim, Merari. Those 3 sons became the heads of the 3 branches of the tribe of Levi later on. They appear in the book of Bamidbar, for example. They each had different jobs in terms of the carrying of the Mishkan through the desert, etc. And then it gives the genealogies. We get down to, it starts with the genealogies of, one second, Okay. Skip now to Pasuk Yudchet. And it says, Ve'ela ha'umdi, Pasuk Yud Zayin. It lists all the descendants of, we'll go back to Tet Zayin, I'm sorry. Okay, we'll skip all the genealogy. When we get to Tet Zayin, it says, Ve'ela asher he'emid David, al yedei shir beit Adonai mimnoach ha'aron. This is the Pasuk we looked at last year when we learned about David. If you recall, we learned about how David brought the Aron to Yerushalayim, and they were Levi'im that led the procession. He brought the Aron to Yerushalayim from the house of Avinadav, and the terrible tragedy happened of Peretz Uzzah when the wagon wheel fell off, and the Uzzah tried to grab the Aron that was on the wagon, and he got struck down by God. And then David canceled the procession. And then he realized later on it was because he put the Aron on a wagon instead of having it being brought by the Levim. So he had Levim carrying it, and he had other Levim singing, and then afterwards we learned about how he placed groups of Levim singing in front of the Aron in Yerushalayim and in front of the, also in Givon. So here it says, Vayihiyu ve'ela asher ha'amid David al yedei shir beit Adonai mimnoach ha'aron. These are the people that David placed in charge of the song to be sung in front of the Aron in Yerushalayim after the Aron came to rest in Yerushalayim. Vayihiyu mishartim lifnei mishkan ha'moed bashir ad binot Shlomo et beit Adonai b'Yerushalayim. Vayamdu kimishpatam al avodatam. I think we talked about this pasuk as well. That these people, David set up a system to have Levim every day in front of the Aron, and that stayed in place until Shlomo built the Beit HaMikdash. Why are we reading this now? Because look at the next pasuk. Ve'ele ha'umdim uvneihem. These are the people that were there. Mibnei ha'kiati, Heman ha'mishorer. First of all, he's called ha'mishorer, the singer, or the poet, or the psalmist. But let's see who he was. Heman ha'mishorer, ben Yoel, ben Shmuel, ben Elkanah. That's Shmuel Hanavi. But keep reading. He's giving his full lineage. He's from the subdivision of Kahat. Again, his lineage is Heimana Mishorer, Ben Yoel, Ben Shmuel, Ben Elkanah, Ben Yerocham, Ben Eliel, Leel, Ben Toach, Ben Tzuf, Ben Elkanah, Ben Machat, Ben Amasai, Ben Elkanah, Ben Yoel, Ben Azariah, Ben Tzfanya, Ben Tachat, Ben Asir, Ben Aviasaf, Ben Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kahat, Ben Levi, Ben Yisrael. The Sefer Divrei Hayamim traces this man Haman's lineage all the way back to Yaakov Avinu. And it seems that his grandfather was Shmuel Anavi, who was a descendant of Korach, Ben Kahat. Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kahat, Ben Levi. The Korach that we know about from Sefer Bamidbar, the one who led the rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. This is one big puzzle. We're going to make sense out of all this. Okay? All these things that we didn't seem to think were connected are connected here. Shmuel HaNavi, it turns out from this pasuk, was a descendant of Korach. Now this is a side point, and I see that you're all looking a little confused, so I don't want to go too deeply into this, but I just want to point out, from here you see that first of all, Shmuel was a Levi, and second of all, he was a descendant of Korach. If you learn the book of Shmuel, neither of those points is made clear. Not only that, if you look at the very beginning of the book of Shmuel, it appears that the book of Shmuel deliberately conceals the fact that Shmuel was a Levi, and certainly that he was a descendant of Korach, but even that he was a Levi. If you read the book of Shmuel without reading Divrei Hayamim and without reading Rashi or anything else, you will get the clear impression that Shmuel was from the tribe of Ephraim. The first,
sure it's the same?
Well, let's put it this way. From his father's name is Elkanah. His son's name is Yoel. Those are both true about Shmuel HaNavi. And it's mentioned earlier. I'm sure it's the same person. Chazal also understood it that way. And it's also mentioned earlier in the parak here. So Shmuel was a Levi. And he was... But the book of Shmuel seems to conceal that fact. The first pasuk in the book of Shmuel is Vayihi ish echad me'aramatayim sofim me'har Ephraim. Ushmo Elkanah. And it lists his lineage and it says Ha'efrati, which can mean the Ephraimite. Now, it's not lying. He comes from the town of Ephraim. It says he's from Har Ephraim. Okay? I come from New York. So you could say he's a guy from New York. And you could even call me a New Yorker, even if I'm not, you know, or maybe that's a bad example. You come from London?
Manchester,
even better. Okay, so I could call you a Mancunian is the term. I'm aware of that. And I could call you English, perhaps. Now, you're not actually English. You're Jewish. You're not a descendant. Right? Well, not by...
nationality.
Exactly. But not by genealogy, right? So I could call someone who lives in Har Ephraim an Ephrati. And the Levim, of course, lived in cities among the tribes. So the Pasuk is not telling us anything that's not true. It says, Vayi ish echad, there was a man, me'aramatayim sofim me'har Ephraim. And he's a...
And also, Hannah brought him up to Eli afterwards.
Exactly. That whole story takes on a whole different significance when you realize that he's a Levi. Now, I'm not going to go into that because it's not our topic, but I think the Book of Shmuel is deliberately concealing that fact, or at least...
Modesty on his part?
I don't think it's modesty. I think it has to do with the fact... I think it has to do with the fact that Shmuel didn't want to be identified with Korach, because what Shmuel was doing, Shmuel's the one who told Eli that his dynasty is going to come to an end, and that the Mishkan is going to be destroyed, and that he's not worthy, his children are not worthy to continue in the priesthood. Saba Rabba Korach once approached a high priest of the Jewish people and said, you know, why do you think you deserve to be in your position? And I think that what the Navi does not want anyone to think, especially if we take Chazal's understanding that Shmuel wrote the book himself, he doesn't want to be portrayed as a descendant of Korach, because he doesn't want to be portrayed as somebody who did what Korach did. On the other hand, his grandson, Haman, at least in one parak of Tehillim, proudly identifies himself. Now we understand that pasuk, first of all, right? We said that parak Pechet of Tehillim is written by Bnei Korach, Lehiman HaEzrachi.
It's already so many generations.
Two generations later, he's proudly taking, right? And maybe what he's trying to say is that what Korach did for the wrong reasons or in the wrong way, there's a time and a place for a descendant of Kahat to approach a Kohen Gadol and say, no. But Korach had one agenda, and Shmuel had a different agenda. Okay, that's all in parentheses. But it's important to understand who this Haman is. Now, so Haman was a descendant of Kahat. And he's Haman HaMishorer. So, assumedly, the Haman HaEzrachi, who's an author of Tehillim, is probably Haman HaMishorer that's mentioned here. Especially because he's one of Bnei Korach there. And he's one of, okay, so I think we can say with a very high degree of certainty that the author of Tehillim Pechet, Haman HaEzrachi, who's mi Bnei Korach, is the Haman that is listed here as the head of the procession of Levim that we're singing in front of the Aron. And it's all the same time period, right? These people were placed in their position by David and continued in their position until Shlomo built the Beit HaMikdash. So Haman was clearly alive at the same time as Shlomo. Okay. So now we know that Haman HaEzrachi, who's mentioned in Tehillim, is a descendant of Korach, was the leader of the Meshorim, the singers of the descendants of Kahat. Kahat also being a descendant of Korach. He seems to be the head, because he's called HaMishorer and he's listed first. And Divrei HaYamim goes to the length of telling us all the generations going all the way back from him through his grandfather Shmuel, all the way back to Korach, all the way back to Kahat, all the way back to Levi, to Yaakov. Now, a few psukim later, we're told that there's also two others. Pasuk Chavdal tells us, V'achiv Asaf, Ha'omed al Yamino, Asaf ben Brechiah, okay, and it says here, if you read on a little further, that he was from Gershom. Asaf we also know from Tehillim. And then we have B'nai Merari. Pasuk Chavtet now. And among Merari, guess who's there? Alasmol. Eitan. Ben Kishi, Ben Avdi, Ben Maluch, V'chule. In other words, there were three, the group of Levim that were singing in front of the Aron, they were broken up into three groups based on the three branches of the tribe of Levi. Gershon, Kehat, and Merari. Each one of them had a person sitting at the top who was the head of that group. it seems that the one in the center, who's Hamishorer, is Heman HaEzrachi, he's from Kahat, he's from Korach. To his right is Asaf, who's from Merari, and to his left is Eitan, who's from Gershom. I'm sorry, you're correct. Asaf is from Gershom, and he's from Merari. Oh, and Heman HaEzrachi, who's the author of Tilim Peichet, is followed, his parak of Tilim is followed immediately by a parak written by someone named Eitan HaEzrachi. And we see that Heman had a contemporary named Eitan. So it's, and we know that Asaf also wrote Tehillim. Okay, so there are these three Mishorerim that are there in Yerushalayim singing in front of the Aron. These are the head guys of the tribe of Levi. The one at the top is Heman. There's also Asaf, and there's also Eitan. Asaf wrote a whole bunch of Tehillim. I think there's 12, if I'm not mistaken, Prakim of Tehillim written by Asaf. There's a whole group written by Bnei Korach, and at least one of them specifically by Heman. And there's also at least one written by Eitan. Okay. This is all working out really well. You with me, or have I lost you so far?
Is there a but?
Yes, there's a but. So far, so good. So we know that there were three Levim who were all alive at the time of Shlomo. They all were the heads of the singers in the Mishkan yet, in front of the Aron, until Shlomo built the Beit HaMikdash. And they all seem to be authors of some of the Tehillim. And Shlomo is wiser than Eitan HaEzrachi and Heman HaEzrachi. Eitan and Heman. There's only one monkey wrench that gets thrown into this, and that is, but they're B'nai Mechol. Eitan and Heman weren't brothers, because one was from Kahat, and one was from Merari. Also, the term Ezrachi, just to confuse you even more, the term Ezrachi, some see as connected to the name Zerach. Does anyone know who Zerach was? Zerach is going to appear in the Torah. Is it? I think it's in this week's Parsha. Yes, we're going to read about Zerach this Shabbat. Yehuda. Here, let's take a quick look. I hope I'm not totally confusing you too much. This Shabbat, only because it's Parshat HaShavua, this Shabbat, we're going to be reading Parshat Vayeshev. And Parshat Vayeshev includes Perek Lamed Chet. Perek Lamed Chet tells the story of Yehuda, who left his brothers, wound up marrying a Canaanite woman, and whatever that means, and then she died, and his sons died, Aaron Onan, and his daughter-in-law Tamar. Doesn't want to let the last son marry her, and in the end, she dresses up as a prostitute, right, and manages to get Yehuda to father two children with her, right. And what do we read? We read the following. Pasuk Paraglamech Pasuk Chavzayin. Vayhi be'et lidita. Right, she was almost executed because Yehuda thought that she committed adultery because she was pregnant, and then she made it clear to him that it was he who was the father, and he said Sadka mimeni, she's right and I'm wrong. And what happened? She's now giving birth. Vinei te'omim bevitna. And it turns out she has twins. And the first one sticks his hand out, and the miyaledet, the midwife, ties a red string around his hand. But then he pulls his hand in and the other one comes out first. And the one who comes out first is called Peretz. Because he broke through. The frotz is to break through. Ma paratz talecha Peretz. And then the second one, the one that had the red string on his hand, was called Zerach. Peretz is the ancestor of David. And therefore of Shlomo. Zerach is the other branch of the tribe of Yehuda. And according to that theory, if Ezrachi means Zarchi, So then Eitan and Heman HaEzrachi would have to be from the tribe of Yehuda. They would then be cousins of Shlomo, but then they couldn't be the same ones who were singing in the Mishkan. But they could be B'nai Machol. In other words, there could be somebody named Machol who has four sons, Eitan and Heman and Chalkol and Darda, and the elder two sons, and they're all very wise, and the elder two sons also have a nickname that goes back to their great ancestor Zerach, and Shlomo's wiser than all of them. But then it would, and then you'd have to ask, are they the ones who wrote the Perakim of Tehillim with Heman and Ezrachi, or were those Leviim? Did they just have to have the same names? I saw an article that I found on the internet by a man whose name, oh no, it escapes me. Zeliger, I forgot his first name. He was an interesting guy. About 100 years ago, lived about 100 years ago here in Yerushalayim. He was one of the one of those who was involved in the early religious Zionism in Galicia, and then he came and settled in Yafo. I think he came to Yerushalayim afterwards. Maybe he was in Yafo, involved in setting up some of the early religious education in this country. And I found this article on the internet that he wrote that just blew me away. He tried to solve this puzzle. And he wants to suggest the following. Eitan HaEzrachi and Heman HaEzrachi and the people mentioned in Tehillim and the people mentioned in Divrei Hayamim and the people mentioned here are all one and the same. In other words, the three Levim from Divrei Hayamim are the authors of Tehillim. They're also the ones mentioned in this Pasuk as B'nai Machol, and they're also descendants of Zerach. How does that work? He says, all we have to do is make one assumption. We're assuming that when we coined them B'nai Machol, it means that Machol was their father. Maybe Machol was a woman, and she was their mother. And she was from the tribe of Yehuda, a descendant of Zerach. And maybe she was married twice. First, she was married to Yoel, the son of Shmuel, and gave birth to Heman. Perhaps after his death, she then got married a second time to the father of Eitan. Or maybe it was the other way around. We don't know which one was older. If that's true, he suggests, then Eitan and Heman, on the one hand, they're half brothers. One is a Levi from the branch of Kehat. One is a Levi from the branch of Merari. But on their mother's side, they're brothers. She Machol. He's reading her. That is a. We don't know if that's a male name or a female name. Is a very wise woman, who is a descendant of Zerach from the tribe of Yehudah, and therefore they're also cousins of Shlomo. Right? And if that's true, you can make all sorts of connections. He goes off in this little article. It's a one-page article. Just birimiza, with hints. He goes off and tries to talk about what Shmuel did and how Shmuel, who was from the tribe of Ephraim, winds up, Ephraim being related to Binyamin, winds up being the one to anoint David instead of Shmuel. Elkanah, his father, married a wise woman, Chana, who was wiser than her husband. And, you know, Yoel ben Shmuel was not a good person. Shmuel was told his sons weren't worthy to take over after him. But his grandson, or his son, the grandson of Shmuel, Heman, becomes the Mishorer. There's all these connections going on here. It means that David's and Shlomo's are connected through their family. There's a connection here between the Levi'im and the tribe of Yehuda and the leadership and all kinds of fascinating things. I have no idea if this is true either, but it's very, very creative, and it does connect all these different things. If not, if we don't accept that, then we can only connect some of them and not others. But the point is this: this pasuk is describing Shlomo. It's mentioning these people that seem to be worthy of being mentioned in this pasuk, even though we don't know who they are, unless we do. Okay. I don't know who Kalkolin Darda and Bnei Mechol are, but at the very least, if Eitan and Heman are the ones mentioned in Tehillim, whether they're brothers or they're not brothers, and whether they're, you know, whatever. But if that's the case, if at least Eitan and Heman are the ones we think they are, the Mishoririm, who are also the authors of the Tehillim, then Shlomo's wisdom is being seen here not only in things like talking about plants and animals and, you know, science and whatever that means, and not only in terms of being able to judge with a certain level of wisdom and understanding, but also in the ability to sing songs that have within them the seeds of Kedusha. And that's something that we know that Shlomo did do. And with that, I want to now turn to the next psukim here. The next psukim, so I just give you two theories, but first about Mitzrayim and Bnei Kedem, and then about these, that I just thought they were both so interesting that I had to share them, but I don't know if either one of them is correct. But b'chol ofen, what is important is that it says here, after telling us how wise he was, that he spoke 3,000 mishalim and chamisha va'alef, whatever that, a large number, let's read it as 1,500, this is machloket, how to read it, songs. And we have in Tanakh three other books that seem to be written by Shlomo. Well, I say seem to. Two of them say so explicitly. Shir HaShirim Asher LeShlomo, Mishlei Shlomo, and Kohelet never uses the name Shlomo. It says Divrei Kohelet Ben David. David had many sons, and he also had many, many descendants. But according to Chazal, Kohelet Ben David is also Shlomo, and it seems to fit in the Pshat as well. It says here that he wrote songs and he wrote Mishalim. And now, it can't be, for example, Mishlei does not have in it 3,000 psukim. Bechlal doesn't have anywhere near that number. So it must be that these three books that we have from Shlomo are a part of the corpus of what he wrote. He wrote 3,000 Mishalim, let's say 1,500 songs, and we have a book called Shir, HaShirim, that he wrote. We have a book called Mishlei. And we have a book called Kohelet that also, I think, fits into the categories of Mishalim and Shirim. So what I would like to do in just a few minutes, I want to just touch each one of those three books, try to see, just in a few psukim, you know, we don't have time to learn all three of them, obviously, but just to kind of see what each one is. Understand that this is part of the wisdom of Shlomo that's being presented to us in the Tanakh. And then I want to make sure to have time to learn with you what I consider to be a fascinating midrash about this, and put all that together back into the context of the city of Yerushalayim that was described in, as the capital of the empire, with this man sitting at the top of people coming all over the world to see, who's wiser than all these other people. So let's take a quick look here. Okay, so let's just try to, with fresh eyes, look at each, very, very, very superficially, look at each one of these three books. I'll start with Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim is found in Tanakh, near the back, the five Megillot are right before Divrei Hayamim, and Shir HaShirim is the first of the five. Now, Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs. You may know that there was a significant debate in Chazal whether this belongs in Tanakh at all. And there was an opinion that it should not be. Probably the reason for that is it doesn't seem to be a very holy book. No? I don't know. The name of God is not mentioned in Shir HaShirim at all. There's another book in Tanakh that doesn't mention the name of God at all. That's Sefer Esther. But Esther, that seems to be part of its message. Esther, Haster Panim, a famous Midrash Chazal. Here we have what appears to be a love song, a series of love poems, poems of love between a man and a woman. But Chazal tell us, in the end, of course, Shir HaShirim was included in Tanakh. I believe one of the Amoraim, if I'm not mistaken, although I might be, I didn't get a chance to look this up, I think it was Reish Lakish who said, Kola Sfarim Kadosh V'Shir HaShirim Kodesh Kodeshim. Song of Songs is actually Holy of Holies. And the general view in Chazal, and in later commentaries as well, the general, most common approach, although there are others, is to view it as a metaphor for the love story between Bnei Yisrael and Hashem. And the metaphor of a marriage that in which God is the groom and we are the bride, this is a metaphor that appears in appears in the Nevi'im later on as a metaphor for our relationship. Hosea speaks of it that way. Yeshayahu speaks about that when we're criticized, we're often criticized for being an unfaithful wife, right? Yeshayahu, for example, when he criticizes us for worshiping idols, he presents it as a woman who's committing adultery. She's unfaithful to her husband because we're the wife and God's the husband. So that's normally the way this is read. However, if I could say so, I think it's a terrible mistake to read. Well, let's put it this way. If you look, for example, at the Art Scroll English translations, I think there are several, of Shir HaShirim, what they do is they don't want to translate it literally. So they do, at least the one I saw, they have the intellectual honesty to write on top of each page something like allegorical translation. You know, so telling you clearly. And then what they do is they go ahead and they take Rashi's commentary, which is one approach based on Midrashim to understand it. And basically, Rashi, on basically every pasuk, drawing on the Midrash, takes the allegorical meaning and tells you what it is, and they go ahead and translate the entire thing so you get only the allegorical meaning and not the literal meaning at all. I think that's a terrible mistake, and it completely loses the point. If these words are good enough for being in the Tanakh, I mean, Art Scroll is what we call Havamina, right? The idea that maybe this isn't appropriate and shouldn't be here. Some of Chazal had that idea, but there was a decision. The decision is to put Shir HaShirim into Tanakh, and if you're going to translate it, then translate it, and you can then go ahead and provide a commentary for an allegory to work, its literal meaning has to mean something also. So let's just read a few psukim here. The beginning and maybe one or two in the middle, just to get a sense of this lodson. There's a man and a woman who are in love with each other. They're known by the terms dod and ra'aya. And the song is all about how they long for each other. They don't ever actually seem to get together, at least not in this. It's all about their longing for one another. Shir HaShirim, we'll just read the first few psukim and maybe one or two things in the middle because I need to just keep my eye on the clock. Yishakeni min shikot pihu. May he kiss me with his mouth. So apparently it's the woman who's speaking here. She opens the song. She longs for his kisses. Ki tovim dodecha miayin. She speaks to him although he seems to not be there. Your love is sweeter to me than wine. L'reach shmanecha tovim shemen turach shmecha al kein alamot ahivucha. The scent of the oil that you pour out or that's poured out in your name is so sweet. Many young women are in love with you, but I'm the one who got you, right? Al kein alamot ahivucha. Mashcheni acharecha narutza. Pull me after you. I want to just follow you. I'll follow you anywhere. Heviani Hamelech Hadarav. If you marry me, I'll feel like the king himself brought me into his royal chamber. You're my prince, you're my king. I want only you. Nagila v'nisna chabach. Nazkira dodecha miyayin meisharim ahivucha. She talks about it again, how your love is sweeter than wine. And she goes on for that. And then she mentions a few psukim later that it seems her brothers made her guard the vineyard. She's stuck on a post. Some samuni no tera et akramim. I'm too busy. I can't go on a date with you. I can't even find you. I don't know where you are. I'm too busy. I'm stuck here guarding the vineyard. Karmi Shali Lo Natarti. I'm guarding my brother's vineyards, but I haven't had a chance to protect my own vineyard and build my own family. Hagidali She'ahava Nafshi. Echa Tireh. Echa Tarbitz Basarayim. It seems that the lover is a shepherd. That's why she doesn't know where she is. She's guarding the vineyard. She's stationary. And he's wandering around with the sheep. She calls out to him, "Tell me, where are you going to be this afternoon? Let's make a rendezvous. Where are you going to be with your sheep?" Shalama yeka otiala edrei chavirecha. Why should I be stuck here with other people's flocks? I want to be with you and your sheep. And then he answers her. As if a call comes from the distance. Im lo tedila chayafa ben hashim. Oh, you who are most beautiful among the women. If you don't know where I am, tzi'ilach bikvei hatzon. Follow the footsteps of the sheep. And you'll find me. Uri'id gidiyotayecha mishkenot haroim. Maybe just one or two other passages just to get the... Paragimel. She talks about how she lies in bed at night thinking about him. Al mishkavi balelot bikashti et she'ahava nafshi. Bikashtiv velo mitzativ. I lie awake at night searching for him. I search him for him, but I cannot find him. Akumana ve'asuv v'abayir b'shvakim u'v'rchovot. She gets up in the middle of the night and starts running through the streets looking for him. Avaksha etcha ahava nafshi. I look for him bikashtiv velo mitzativ. I look for him, but I can't find him. Mitzauni ashomrim asovim bayir. There's policemen walking around in the streets. It's dark. It's nighttime. It's dangerous. They found me. Lady, what are you doing here? And she tells them, etcha ahava nafshi ra'itim. Have you seen my beloved? And they have not. Maybe one more. Perakei Pasuk Bet, a very famous passage that was, among other things, popularized by Rav Soloveitchik, who wrote a very, very important essay based on these psukim. Ani shena v'libi er. She actually fell asleep, finally. But my heart is still awake. I never fully sleep because I'm longing for you. And suddenly there's a knock at the door. Kol dodi dofek. He knocks at the door. He finally came. Pitchili. Achoti, Rayati, Yonati, Tamati, my beloved, all these different words, my sister, I love you, open the door. Sherotzi, Nimlatao, Kvutsotai, Resise, Laila, I've been running through the night, I'm wet with dew, because I've been running to find you. Open the door. And she's not fully awake. She says, oh, but I'm not dressed, I'm too tired, Bashatati, Et Kutanti, Echachayel Bashena, I can't get up and get dressed right now. Rachatsti, Et Raglai, Echachayet Anfein. Oh, I already washed my feet and I'm in bed and I have to get dressed and get dirty again. I'm tired, not now. So, shalach dodi shalach yado min achor. So he removed his hand from the door and he left because she told him not now. Umei hamu alav, and suddenly I missed him. Kamti ani liftoach ledodi. She flies, throws the door open, but he's gone. She missed the opportunity. And again, all this is meant to be a metaphor for our relationship with Hashem. Soloveitchik takes that particular passage and puts it in the context of history, of how there's opportunities and God comes knocking at our door and we sometimes say, no, not now, we're too tired, and then we miss the opportunity for the redemption. V'chule, v'chule. Okay, so this is Shlomo's song. The song of love, which is beautiful poetry in its own right and has to be read that way before you can, right, infuse the spiritual meaning into it. Okay, that's Shir HaShirim. Now let's take a quick look at Mishlei. Mishlei, we have to go back into earlier in Tanakh. There's a reason I'm doing them in this order, even though it's out of the order of Tanakh. We'll get to that in a second when we get to the Midrash. Mishlei is at the beginning after Tehillim. After Tehillim comes Mishlei. The purpose of the book is told to us also in the first few psukim. Mishlei Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael. So we'll translate that. These are the proverbs. But again, Sefer Melachim told us that Shlomo wrote songs and proverbs, Mishalim and Shirim. We just read some of his songs. Now we're reading some of his proverbs. What's the purpose of these? So first of all, it says here, Mishlei Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael. Very clearly who the author is. Ladat chokhma u musar Lahavin imrei vina. The purpose of this is to understand, to know wisdom. Musar in modern Hebrew means morality. The biblical term might be a little bit different. It's perhaps more related to the term of rebuke. Yisurim is related to the word musar, which ultimately is not all that different than morality, but it has more of a focus on discipline and on doing what's right. Lakachat musar haskel. The phrase musar haskel, I don't know if you've ever heard that phrase, it's used in yeshivot, based on this pasuk. Literally, musar and haskel. Musar, which we just said means discipline and morality. Haskel means understanding. So the purpose of these mishalim is to enable you to understand what you need in order to live a proper life. Tzedek u'mishpat u'meisharim. And then he goes on, for example, if you... let's maybe take an example. Basically, there are all sorts of... In many parts of this book, there's not even a connection between one pasuk and the next. Many parts of the Sefer are simply collections of what we call one-liners. Each pasuk is a separate point, and they don't necessarily have any at least clearly evident connection between them. In some cases, there are a few psukim that are lumped together. I'll give you one example of that, also a well-known one. Perek. Perek Vav, Pasuk Vav. He talks to lazy people. Lech el Nimala Atzel. Ra'ei Dracheha Vachacham. O you lazy person, go and look at an ant. Observe ants. And see how they act, and you'll become wise. Ants, what do ants do? Asher ein la katzin shoter moshel. There's no, if you look at a bunch of ants, right, they're always moving back and forth in straight lines, usually. If you ever get your kitchen infested and you have to clean it up and spray the poison. So after you finish screaming and before you start spraying, according to Mishle, stop for a minute and watch them. See what they're doing, right? They're crawling on your countertop. And in Gush Etzion we have terrible problems with ants, so I see this almost every winter, and then we know, I mean, almost every spring, and it's time to, you know, get out the poison. These tiny little ones, and all of a sudden, yesterday they weren't there, and you wake up in the morning, your countertop is covered with them, right? And they start crawling around, and they pick up little pieces of food that are bigger than they are, and they carry them, right? And they carry them to their, wherever they live. And so... In la katzin shoter moshel. It's not like there's a taskmaster with a whip or a policeman standing there or a foreman, you know, arguing and blowing whistles and telling them what to do. They do it on their own. And why? Tachin b'kayitz lachma, agra b'katzir ma'achala. She knows what she's doing, the ant. She's in the summer when there's plenty of food, she prepares and puts it all away. So then in the winter she'll have what to eat. And you, O lazy person, ad matai atzel tishkav. How long are you going to stay in bed? I feel like I'm talking to, I won't finish the sentence, but some people live in my house. Ad matai atzel? How long can you stay in bed? Ad matai atzel tishkav? How long can you stay in bed? Matai katum mishnatecha? When are you going to be finished sleeping? Ma'at shenot, ma'at tenumot, ma'at chibuk yadayim lishkav, uva kemalich, reishcha u'machsorcha ki'ish magen. Learn from the ant, who if the ant would stay in bed all summer, she would starve in the winter, right? So if you want to make something of yourself in life, say you got to do your homework, and you got to, get out of bed and get to school on time, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So these are words of wisdom. And the whole Sefer is filled with these things. Again, some of them are just one-liners, some of them are, you know, well-known. That's the book of Mishlei.
I just have to say, lazy person is called sluggard here.
All right. Sometimes I find it easier to understand the Hebrew than the English translation. Let's take a quick look at the book of Kohelet now, and then we'll try to... Okay, so Shirim Asher L'Shamo, he wrote this love song, which has spiritual meanings, and he also wrote down these words of wisdom, these proverbs that are meant to teach you the proper way to live, teach you proper morality, and also proper, you know... Okay, so in Kohelet, again, right before Devar Hayamim. Oh, no, I'm sorry, before Ezra and Nehemiah. Kohelet is between Eicha and Esther. Divrei Kohelet ben David, Melech Birushalayim. Again, Kohelet is assumed to be Shlomo, the son of David, who's a king in Yerushalayim. Havel Havalim, Amar Kohelet. Havel Havalim, Hakol Havel. Everything is meaningless. Havel means wind, literally. Much later on, a great man said, all we are is dust in the wind. Right? Everything is just like blowing wind. Nothing really means anything. What's the point? Everything a person does and works hard in this world, it's all for nothing. Because dor holeich v'dor ba. V'aretz l'olam amadet. People work hard their whole lives, they try to accomplish things, in the end, everybody dies. And in 100 years or 200 years, none of us will be here. And another generation comes. Generations come and generations come, and the world always stays the same. V'zarach ha-shemesh u'va'a shemesh. The sun rises and the sun sets. Everything seems the same. Nothing ever changes. Masha pasuk ted, masha haya, hu sheyeh, that which was is that which will be. U'masha na'asa, hu sheyeh yaseh, ve'en kol chadash tachat ha-shemesh. Sounds very pessimistic. It sounds like some of those Eastern religions we spoke about earlier, right? That and this theme appears later on in the book as well. First of all, before you get to that, before we return to that theme, look at Pasuk Yud Bet. Again, this also is one of the reasons why it's pretty clear that this is Shlomo. He tells you, we read about the elaborate palace, and we'll read later on also, about the elaborate palace and the fancy meals and everything. Ani Kohelet, Hayiti Melech HaYisrael B'Yerushalayim, V'natati et libi l'drosh v'latur b'chokhma al kol asher na'asa tachat ha-shamayim. I decided to investigate everything. I did a philosophical or experiential, maybe, study of everything that exists under the sky. Hu inyan ra, natan Elohim levnei ha'adam lanotpo. It's all evil. It's all meaningless. Ra'iti et kol ha'masim shenatzu tachat ha'shamesh. Everything that exists under the sun. V'inei ha'kol hevel ru'ut ruach. It's all meaningless. And he says, later on in the perek, he talks about how he tried different things. He says, I tried wisdom. We know that Shlomo was the wisest, right? He says in Pasuk Tet Zayin, Dibarti ani im libi lemor ani, hinei higdalti v'osafti chokhma kol asher haya lefanai al Yerushalayim, v'libi ra'a harbei ha-chokhma v'dat. I was the smartest guy on earth. Even smarter than Haman and Eitan and Dardan, Chakol, B'nei, Mechol. Betna libi ledat chokhma v'dat holalut v'sichlut, yadati shigam zehu rayon ruach. And I saw that in the end, wisdom doesn't get you anywhere. You can be smart, but it's not going to accomplish anything. So then I decided to try a different philosophy. A philosophy that maybe is called Epicureanism among the Greeks. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. He said, I've tried that. Pasperek bet. Amarti li b'libi. L'chana anascha b'simcha. I'll try rejoicing. I'll try making parties. And I saw that this is also meaningless. Pasuk Gimel. Tarti v'libi l'mshoch b'yayin and b'sari. I figured I'll drink. I'll enjoy good wine. V'libi nohei b'chochma l'chol b'sichlut. And I saw it's not going to make any difference. I tried physical wealth. Pasuk Dalid. Higdalti masai baniti li batim natati li kramim. I built palaces. I planted vineyards. Asiti li ganotu pardesim. I made gardens. Benatati bahem eitz kol peri. Planted all sorts of trees. I made beautiful gardens. Asiti li brechot mayim, lashkot mehem yard tzomech etzim, or whole irrigation systems. I made all this thing. Kaniti avadim ushfachot. I had many, many servants, exquisite wealth. Mikne bakar vatzon arbe ayali, lots of animals, more than anyone before me in Yerushalayim. Kanasti li gam kesef v'zahav, plenty of gold and silver. Sgulam melachim amidinot. Asiti li sharim v'sharot v'tanugot bnei adam shida v'shidot. I had people singing in front of me, royal minstrels, and I had chests of jewels. The gadalti v'hosafti mikol shayalef anai b'Yerushalayim. Af chochmati amdali, and I didn't allow it to corrupt me. My wisdom remained with me. V'chol asher shalu einai lo atzalti mayem. Anything I wanted, I didn't deny myself. Lo manati libi mikol simcha. I didn't hold anything back. And then, and when I finished this whole project, I saw everything I'd done. I built palaces and gardens, and I had banquets, and I had servants. None of it's going to make a difference. Because you know why? Pasuk Yibed, Ufaniti ani lirot chokma v'lutisun, ki me adam shebo achrei ha-melech et asher kvar asau. Someone's going to, one day I'm not going to be here and someone else is going to inherit all this. And what difference is it going to make anyway? There are voices in Chazal that wanted to get rid of this book also. It sounds almost, he says, everything's worthless, life's meaningless, nothing has a point. But in the end, they agreed to accept it. Here as well, the Midrashim step in and try to put things in perspective. They point out that he constantly talks about Tachat HaShemesh, Tachat HaShemesh. Nothing under the sun is of any value, but there's something that's above the sun. There are eternal things. And of course, the point of the book comes soon. It's very final psukim. Sof davar hakol nishma. When it's all finished, when all said and done. Et ha'elohim yira et mitzvotav shemor ki ze kol ha'adam. All that matters is fear of God. That's all that matters. Nothing else matters. Not wealth, not power, not even wisdom. It's all valuable only if it's used for a higher purpose. Because this world is temporary, or at least humanity is temporary. Maybe the world's permanent. The sun rises, the sun sets, the rivers flow. But no human being is permanent. We're here for a brief period of time. Again, another wise man who came much later said, my 11th grade English teacher would be so happy that I can put this by heart. Man is but a poor player, Shakespeare, that struts his, and frets his hour upon the stage, and then is heard no more. Right? Tis a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Right? Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of all men, said that first, but Shlomo said, there's a difference. Sof davar kol nishma. There is one thing that matters. So this is the repository of Shlomo's wisdom that has been left to us in Tanakh. Shir HaShirim, Mishlei, and Shlomo. Three very different visions. Shir HaShirim, Mishlei, and Kohelet. Three very different visions. Very quickly, I want you to just take a look at this fascinating, fascinating midrash. Shir HaShirim Rabbah. The copy got a little distorted there. But the midrash tells us, and we have to read this carefully, it's a little bit complicated, this debate that's going on here. Shlosha Sfarim Katav. Mishlei v'Kohelet Shir HaShirim. Those are the three books. Ezeh mehen katav tchila. In what sequence did he write these books? Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yonatan. Okay, so the Midrash tells us two Tanaim, two of the rabbis, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yonatan, had a debate about, they both agree that Shlomo wrote all three of these books, but they debated on the sequence. But then we'll see that debate itself has two versions. So first it tells us one version. Rabbi Chiya Rabba Amar, Mishlei katav tchila, v'acharkach Shir HaShirim, v'acharkach Kohelet. His position is that Mishlei was written first, then Shir HaShirim, then Kohelet. And how do we know that? Umayti lamei haikra. He gets that from the pasuk that we started with earlier today, namely, v'yidaber shloshet alafim mashal. Mashal zeh sefer Mishlei. V'yu shiro chamisha v'alef zeh Shir HaShirim, v'kohelet pasof. Since the pasuk that we read mentioned Mishalim and then Shirim, so it follows that he wrote first Mishlei, then Shir HaShirim, and Kohelet at the end. And Rabbi Yonatan seems to think that it was a different order, although it doesn't tell us what he said here. That's one version of this debate. But then the Midrash continues, tells us, Matinyata de Rabbi Chia Rabba Pligal Hadein Shmata. That's Aramaic. This report that we just got of this debate is conflicted by a different version of the text. Matnita Amra, the Braita, the earlier version of the debate is, Shloshtan Katav Ka'achat, Ushmat Amar Kocha Bechabif Neatzmo. Rabbi Chiya Rabba, according to the version we had, the question was, what was the sequence, right? So we read the version that Rabbi Chiya Rabba said, he wrote first Mishlei, then Shir HaShirim, and then Kohelet. But a different version of Rabbi Chiya Rabba's statement is that he wrote all three at the same time. Shloshtan Katav Ka'achat. He wrote all three at the same time. There was no sequence. He sat down and wrote three books and came out with a trilogy. Ushmata Amar Kocha Bechabifnei Atzma. So the version that we just read, I told you, the text of this breit is a midrash is a little confusing. So basically we have two versions of Rabbi Chiya Rabba's statement. One version is that he started with Mishnah, then wrote Shir HaShirim, and then wrote Kohelet. The second version is that he wrote all three at the same time. But what did Rabbi Yonatan say? So that's the breita now that has that version says, Tani Rabbi Chiya Rabba, Rak le'id ziknat Shlomo, shatal av ruach hakodesh ve'amar shlosha sfarim, Mishlei Kohelet v'Shir HaShirim. The version that we have in the breita of Rabbi Chiya Rabba is that he wrote all three books at the same time, and at what point in his life? In his old age. Although we already pointed out that Shlomo's old age wasn't all that old, but at the end of his life. And Rabbi Yonatan disagrees. Rabbi Yonatan amar, Shir HaShirim katav tchila, v'achar kach Mishlei, v'achar kach Kohelet. He disagrees and says, no, they were written separately and in a different sequence than the other opinion we saw. Shir HaShirim was first, then Mishlei, and then Kohelet. And how does he know this, Rabbi Yonatan? He knows it from common sense. Umayti Rabbi Yonatan miderech eretz. He gets it from the way of the world. This is the way things are. Kesha'adam na'ar, omer divrei zemer. When a person is in his youth, he's full of optimism and poetry, and he writes something like Shir HaShirim. Higdil, when he gets to be an adult, maybe a middle-aged person, he starts to become wise and sober. Omer divrei mishalot. He writes words of wisdom and proverbs. He's keen when he becomes old. Omer divrei havalim. He gets depressed and pessimistic, and he sees divrei havalim. Three different views here. I want to focus on the latter two. Rabbi Yonatan's, I think, and he says it's based on logic, right? He says you read Shir HaShirim, you get the feeling that you're reading a book written by or at least about young people, right? When you saw the image of the shepherd and the woman, right? If we were going to make a movie out of this, I don't think we would, you know, hire elderly actors, right? They're young and they're beautiful and they're youthful. That's the image there. The bitterness of Kohelet, you get the bitterness of the image is of an old person who's bitter.
Or who's seen.
Seen life and come to the conclusion that maybe bitterness is a little bit too strong of a term, but it's been through life, been there, done that, and sees that it, but coming with what seems to be a very pessimistic message, and the sober calculations of you know lechem anemala atzel, you know, kind of make something. You see a middle aged person, you know, maybe trying to get his young college aged son out of bed, you know, or teenager, you know. You got to make something of yourself in this world, right? He's not full of the youthful optimism on one end. He's not yet at that point either. So Rabbi Yonatan says, now remember, each one of these is a spiritual message. So what Rabbi Yonatan's saying is that at each point in Shlomo, always Shlomo's wisdom, when he's a young person filled with youth, he's able to see and use the eyes of youth to see eternal truths. When he's a sober, middle-aged person, he's able to see eternal truths through those eyes. And when he's an old person who sees that life is really meaningless, he's able to say, but there is one thing that's still meaningful, and that's the book of Kohelet. On the other hand, Rabbi Chiya Rabba, the first version of Rabbi Chiya Rabba, that Mishlei comes before Shir HaShirim, I can't figure that version out. But the version that he wrote all three at the same time, That to me is even more fascinating. The old man Shlomo, according to Rabbi Yonatan, is the Shlomo who wrote Kohelet, having left Mishlei and Shir Shirim in his past. According to Rabbi Chiya Rabba, the elderly Shlomo sits down and together writes all three of these books. And to me, that takes his wisdom to a whole different level, because they're all true. The wisdom of old age doesn't mean that what they used to say, youth is wasted on the young, right? But young people think they know more than old people. You know, those old people, they're, what do they know? You know, old timers from the last generation. We're running the world now. Then they get old and they say, all those stupid kids, right? Now, the old people don't get a chance to become young again. So the idea is, often is, and it's the elderly people that, look down at the younger people and tell them, listen to someone who's been around for a while, we have what to say. This Midrash says that's true, that's absolutely true. And I don't need to talk about how the Torah tells us many, many times to respect elderly people, not just because, we should be nice to them, but because there's something worthy of respect. Zaken, say Chazami, Zesha Kanach Chochma, right? It's someone who's acquired wisdom. But what this Midrash is saying is that there's also a wisdom in youth. And there are things that young people can see that old people can't see. And Shlomo, and there's a wisdom of middle age too. And whether he wrote each book at a different point in his life, or whether he had the wisdom to write them all at the same point in his life. Right? He's telling us that each one of those perspectives is a window to eternal truths. And there's a time in Kohelet he wrote, L'chol Zman, we didn't look at those two things. L'chol Zman ve'et l'chol chayfetz. Right? There's a time and a place for everything. Eit lehov, eit lehov, right? There's a time for Shir Shir, there's a time for Mishnah, there's a time for Kohelet. They're all true, and they're all written by one person, perhaps even at the same time. So this is the wisdom of Shlomo that's presented to us in Parakeh, and this is the Shlomo that sat at the top of the city of Yerushalayim. This is the vision that we have here. Okay, we're going to take a break now for